Hey, what's up, Dan? Good to see you.
Good to see you, man.
Glad to be here. So last time we were on the show was 7 years ago. I looked it up. You were one of the first people I interviewed. And I know life was very different probably for both of us. You were in Bozeman running Everyman. I think your first son was just born.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of things have happened in the last 7 years, including a pandemic and whatnot. But could you catch me up? Like, what's been happening since Everyman, since you're in Bozeman?
Yeah. I have three kids now. Duke is seven. Jude is five. Wilderness, my daughter, is two. Since we talked, we moved from Montana to California for a couple years. Had this like blissful couple years where we went fully minimal, lived in a RV for a couple years on a farm and just sort of
sweet.
Like, I don't know. That was a high point. And then the pandemic hit and it didn't feel super secure. So we moved cross country. We landed in Maine. I'm looking at the ocean, the Atlantic.
Nice. Right now.
And yeah, professionally, I exited Everyman, left that organization. And I mean, even while I was there, I was making my living as a executive coach and consultant. That's how I was like making stuff work. So I've sort of lit into that with more fervor. I'm a partner at a organization called Evolution, which is an executive coaching consulting firm. And I've built a platform called Fatherhood Unlocked with a podcast and programming education for dads, expecting dads, and a online community for dads. That's the thumbnail, man. Cool. That's the high level.
What made you choose Maine? Because we're possibly looking at coming back to the States, and New Hampshire's on the short list.
Yeah.
But curious what made you choose that.
Honestly, well, we were looking at several places. We initially just got in our vehicle and drove from California to Vermont, where my wife's parents live, and stayed with them the summer of 2020, kind of when things were super intense. And I don't know, took some trips, looked at some spots, and we were having a hard time. We had like that very unique modern problem of could pretty much live wherever we wanted. And there was no specific like nexus of family or friends that was calling us. And so we actually just took a weekend trip to Maine and to see a friend. And she suggested we come out, look at the little cluster of villages on the coast here. And we found a good spot, man. And I guess the bigger, deeper answer is it feels very, very, very safe, like geographically safe, natural resource safe, and land's really cheap. And it's just like a good, solid, very family oriented place to be for sure.
Cool. I'll have to check it out. Cause we're in a similar place of like, we can live anywhere. You know, our friends are spread out over the world. She's from Europe. So like our family's everywhere. And like, it's like this paradox of choice thing that we don't know, you know?
It's worth a look, man. Portland's a wonderful city. It's still a ways away from where we are, but high quality of life. And if you kind of, I mean, it's a little boring. You know, I lived in New York City for a long time on the West Coast, and but I say boring with love. Now, like, my priorities have just shifted, and this is a good spot to be,
for sure. And then the shift from Everyman, or I guess less than the organizations, like the shift from doing kind of men's circles and focused on that kind of work to fatherhood. Can you speak a little bit about that? I guess the internal shift in interest, maybe?
Yeah, a little bit. Definitely. I mean, it lined up with where I am in life, right? And I started kicking the kids out, not kicking them out, but having them, giving birth to them. And, you know, part of it was just out of sort of respect for Everyman too, just to sort of not immediately compete or create, you know, any, you know, like friction there. But it also just has clarified as a very unique juncture in a man's life where support and education and training just really, it's where the rubber hits the road for a lot of guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like you go through life and then all of a sudden your heart just explodes because it does that when you have kids, and your responsibilities are bigger and different and more all encompassing. And there's just not much out there in terms of, you know, I'm really passionate about, you know, expecting dads education, you know, helping dads who are men about to become dads. And then these first, you know, 5 years of parenthood are a fucking suffer fest for so many, you know? And so just really get excited about offering support and community at that time.
Cool. So I want to ask you a lot about fatherhood because I have a 2-year-old now and another one's on the way. But actually, before I forget, I think one of the reasons why I reached out last summer, I shot you a message that neither of us saw because we don't use Facebook. But when I was preparing for our first interview, on your website, you had a blog and you wrote a blog post about something like choosing your partners, like choosing the right pair of boots. I think
that's an old one.
Is that right? I mean, that's what I'm remembering.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, yeah. I wasn't like consciously thinking of it when I chose to marry my wife, but I think it must have affected me as opposed to like, cause like my decision making was so different. And like, I remembered it last year, like looking back and at like basically getting married and connecting with my wife of how I kind of shifted my paradigm for what I think is common in dating and relationships now, where people kind of look at choosing a partner, like buying a computer or some other object where they're comparing stats and attributes and like, well, this person has this, but this person has that, but they're missing this, as opposed to what I remember at least was the gist of that blog post you wrote of like, all that matters is like, where do you want to go and who fits that? So I just want to say thanks. And also I remembered it and, you know, whether I'm remembering it correctly or not, I think it affected me in a positive way.
That's good. I haven't thought about that in a long time. Have you ever had so that's coming from the perspective of making my living for a long time as a wilderness guide and as a, you know, a wilderness TV producer. So that a pair of boots that really works for you is like one of the most foundational choices you can make, right? Doesn't seem mm-hmm. like maybe that big a deal, but I've had a couple pairs of boots I've probably put, God, I don't know, thousands of miles on, right? And there's just this worn, yet supportive, yet familiar kind of joy in putting on. That's funny. It's fun that you brought that up. I haven't thought about that analogy in a long time. But yeah, it's still.
Yeah, because, at least I'll say from my experience, at least partnership, there's certain values that seem important when you're not thinking about long-term commitment or forever commitment or having a family that seem fun and you can add them to the list of like pros or cons, but they don't really matter when you're going on a long journey, let's say. Like it doesn't matter what color your hiking boots are, let's say, and or whatever. Anyway, not to beat the analogy to death. So anyway, I'm a dad now. Mm-hmm. One of the other reasons why I wanted to reach out and actually what you just said a second ago with like starting Fatherhood Unlocked, I did find it difficult to find resources that resonated with me and also fit. I mean, I've been doing a lot of men's work outside of fatherhood that actually fit that. And I was looking at, you know, in our culture, the father in like family shows is usually seen as so dopey. Like that's kind of the modern view of it. One of the kids shows that are popular now. I mean, I think your kids are maybe beyond this, Peppa Pig. You know, like the criticism from men like me is that they caricaturize this father who's like so inept and like the butt of all jokes and obviously can't provide anything useful because everyone just makes fun of him and, you know, shits on him. And then other kinds of parenting advice for dads, a lot of it's kind of from that paradigm. I feel like this assumption that men are these dopey kids that are trying to be useful as opposed to like actually useful advice that fits in with being an empowered man. So I'm curious what you think of that before I go into anything specific and like, I guess how you've been trying to fit into advice for men.
So I have an answer for you, but first, so we have evaded Peppa Pig for some reason. So I've never actually mm-hmm. seen episodes. So the father on
Peppa Pig idea.
Is a dope. The dad.
Yeah. I've only seen two episodes, but I think it's a terrible model for like a daughter to father relationship. Like she berates him and he's just like an idiot. And that's like where a lot of the humor comes from.
Yeah. How about Bluey? Have you
checked? I love Bluey. Bluey's great. Bluey's the dad is great. The family's great. The kids are great role models. Yeah. Bluey's awesome.
So my bigger answer there, though, what I think is really pretty astounding, and I've spent a lot of time thinking and writing about this, but the paradigm for what fatherhood is becoming is, I think, actually historical, like on a level of humanity, historical. If you think about one generation, my father's generation or the generation preceding you and I as current dads here, I mean, it's just a completely different landscape, right? I think that I was born in the 80s, but I think even up to being born in the 90s, maybe even longer than that. But, you know, there was still a very somewhat traditional inflection of what a dad's role was. You know, it was still very much the provider, protector, not that involved compared to now. I mean, and to take that even a little bit further, which is a really big deal, is that, you know, it wasn't that many years prior to when I was born that that dads were even invited into the birth process, right? So mm-hmm. we're talking about a scale of, you know, 40 years, 60 years from when dads have even been considered as a possibility of being a primary support in pregnancy, in birth, in the postpartum period, and then parenting, right? And so there is a huge new set of expectations and possibilities for us as dads. And I believe we have innate within us, in a kind of primally, we have the capacity to step up into all of these new things, but it is not what we were. It's not what we saw. It's not what we were prepared for. It's that we didn't like get the training. So, yeah, I just think it's a big deal, man. It's a really big deal how, you know, we still, most of us, everybody obviously has a different, you know, thing going on, but most of us still need to work and do well. And, I mean, you can break into a lot of different chunks, but just the ability to be open and connected and present in so many different ways, emotionally, you know, energetically, spiritually, and then, you know, full partners in a household, full partners financially. It's just a different landscape. And a lot of guys that in my circles here are kind of needing to take on a pretty wildly accelerated growth curve to be able to sort of stand up to it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, even Western culture as a whole is kind of going through a major shift where maybe a new culture is being formed and it's kind of in a weird infancy, let's say, and fatherhood being maybe one of the discarded parts of that, I think. So one of the things I saw you post on Instagram that caught my eye, it was something about dads of this generation wanting to do things differently than previous generations. And what I'm curious what your take is on why is it only now that it seems that this generation of dads are asking this, and maybe any other roots of that?
Yeah. So I have an under-researched sort of sociological perspective here. And that is that, again, thinking about my generation, I think we just had enough resource. We had enough time. We had, I grew up in the Midwest of the United States. Right. And so my sense is that, you know, my parents, I mean, fundamentally did an incredible job. Right. And we weren't under physical threat. We weren't under any sort of real acute threat of any sort. And I feel like culturally, familially, and individually, I just feel like we had enough room and time to be safe enough to think about things in a deeper way. It's been less about surviving in a day-to-day way. And I think, you know, what I know from experience is that when we feel safe enough, you know, the stuff that probably wants to be healed comes alive, right? And then like, mm-hmm. there it is. And so that's just one take on it. But I do think that we're just culturally, societally, I don't know what the right exact layer is to name, has given the space for this to be possible.
You know, basically, we're more abundant, and we could go up higher on Maslow's hierarchy.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't remember if you wrote it in that post, but like this idea of passing on traumas versus not passing on traumas is kind of like an idea in the parenting space, let's say. And I hesitate to use that for my own situation because my parents did the best they could, but I can also see that most of my insecurities I have in common with my dad, and he just didn't have the resources or the knowledge to work on them himself. So, you know, that got passed on to me without, you know, his intention. I was wondering, what do you've noticed as far as shifting from like, you know, non-fatherhood personal development work into now like how you suggest men look at their role as a father?
Yeah, it's a good question because the underlying principles don't really shift for the most part. I think, right. You know, learning to be present is just a fucking good thing to do. Mm-hmm. Building our ability to connect with others, you know, to be intimate in many kinds of ways. Good thing to do, you know, be clear, be sort of able to execute on a direction when you need to. Good thing to do. And those are the things that, I work with dads on, but the stakes are much different, right? The stakes are much higher. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just, and this is not unique to me, but if you break a man's life into being and doing, or possibly being, doing, and relating, right? Just these sort of simple sectors of our life and our experience. The impact of just who we are, you know, take out what we believe, take out what we say, but the impact of how we just actually are as we show up, as we interact, we can literally see in real time if we're aware enough, or we can at least hear the feedback from of where it is causing problems, you know, causing pain. And so fatherhood gives us a container for reflection and accountability that it'd be hard to replicate, I believe. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's that accountability it just never goes away. Right. The tightness of that is just always there. I also feel like fatherhood gives us a leg up and kind of a huge acceleration into presence and relationality in a way that just really, really fucking counts. And, again, like it's not a given. It's not like you become a dad and all of a sudden, boom, you're like able to relate. But I do think the hormonal changes, the oxytocin sort of flush, the heart expansion that happens most of the time, you know, ideally happens for all dads. It just changes our cosmology, right? It shifts our both healthy and unhealthy narcissistic tendencies toward a place of just recognizing it right sizes us in a sense, right? Or it has the capacity mm-hmm. to right size us. And it's been hard for me, man. I mean, I did an immense amount of growth work and meditation and all the retreats you could ever want to do in your life before I became a dad. And when it happened, I was just astounded like at how it pointed out my weak spots and undeveloped places. And I don't know. I think it sets the natural conditions for us to grow healthily, you know, toward a place of fullness, right? One of the, not many people talk about this. I talk about it sometimes, but there's a concept called ontogeny, which is just the study of an organism's maturation process through the phases of life, right? So the ontogenetic mm-hmm. journey of an oak tree is you start as an acorn and then a sprout and a sapling and, you know, kind of go through life until you're this big mature tree. And I think societally, our male landscape is not dominated. It's not old growth trees all over the place, mm-hmm. right? There's not that much sort of full maturity around. You have to really look for it. And
yeah.
I think fatherhood gives us a shot at that if we want to take it on.
Yeah, because you know, as far as like men's development as a whole, and this is also kind of my criticism of culture nowadays, is that it seems to only value one phase of the tree, like the sapling phase. Like everyone wants to, yeah. And I see like a lot of the male role models right now for young men are kind of suggesting being an adolescent forever. And I think I'm guilty of this too, you know, like, yeah. you know, be dating and single and into your 40s or whatever the narrative is that's kind of underlying everything. Whereas, you know, two generations ago, most men were fathers by 20. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm curious what you think of that. And also with what you just shared, like how much work should someone do? I know there's maybe not one answer to this, but how much, you know, taking lots of workshops to work on yourself before becoming a father, versus just like throwing yourself in there and then growing then. Cause it's like, you can't really prepare fully beforehand.
Yeah. It's there's some intricacies, right? I mean, one answer is get it in first, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I'm really grateful for all the practice that I had and all the work that I did before I became a dad. And I think, yeah. So if somebody actually asked me that question, I'd be like, yeah, fucking get after it, you know, before you become a dad. Mm-hmm. Cause a lot of it sticks. It can. At the same time, yeah, I was just talking to a friend this morning who had his first kid a month ago. And yeah, like you just can't prepare. You really can't. I'm really somewhat obsessed with this question. It's like, can we prepare men more? Can we prepare them better for this transition and for this role? I think we can, but there's some level of it where you just fucking can't, man. Like, you know, baby comes and whatever sleep situation is, like, just puts you through a trial that's hard to replicate through anything. And yet cultures did it forever, right? In a different mm-hmm. way. So the process of initiation, again, is mostly not alive in our modern culture, Western culture mm-hmm. right now. But that wasn't true for humans, right? And there's lots of places that's still not true. But I think what we're kind of experiencing here in fatherhood is going into it fairly uninitiated. And I don't have the quote in front of me, but there's this idea of there's formal initiation, you know, where your community sets up a trial for you and really like puts you through the test and helps you grow up. That's helpful. And then there's just natural sort of, if you don't get initiated, life is going to initiate you. So I think that mm-hmm. a lot of men come to this stage and the heat gets turned up when they become a dad, and it's like, you know, life is going to shave off the bumpy spots for you. And it's long mm-hmm. and it's arduous and it's not comfortable. And so I think that, you know, for dads to find a tribe, a community, support, or even just the right concepts for that time can sort of help potentiate that growth and hopefully reduce some suffering along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause thinking of like the initiations in a Paleolithic tribe, a man would become a father and his dad would also be kind of a young man, maybe also still having kids. Like you might be 20 and your dad is still having kids at 40. And you know, that it's like right there, but it, you know, and then there's many other men in your tribe basically doing that in front of you all the time. Right. Whereas now in isolation, like I, you know, I'm one of the first of my immediate friends that have kids. Like I don't have that anywhere, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you simplify it, which isn't fully fair, but I think it's fair enough. You know, think of any, I don't know, maybe it's not true anymore, but even 20 years ago, 40 years ago, any job you were going to take, any role you're going to take on in life, you'd get trained for it. You'd go to school for it. You know, you'd become an apprentice. You'd do the thing. And yeah, I think when we had more intact villages and communities around us, that training was just a part of life, right? We saw it, we felt it, we lived it. And yeah, now the way that we're so spread out and isolated, we don't get it. And I think that in combination with the changing of the job description, one of the fun things I like to do is with my groups of dads is literally take the time to list out sort of every bullet point. If they were to create a job description of being a dad today, right? It's a long fucking list, right? And it's a list that there's not mastery of, right? There's, you know, maybe a quarter of the list. It's like, oh yeah, I got that, right? I certainly have been prepared for that part of it. But a lot of it not, you know, I think, it's just a big, it feels like it's obviously societally, we're in a moment of transitioning to what? I don't really fucking know. But I also believe that this sort of general sense of transition in the world for me, helps me kind of clear the clutter and refocus on the family as something stable, something real, something clear, right? It's like whatever the fuck AI does in the next 10 years or whatever the hell the political landscape does, like my responsibility is here, right? It's simple. It doesn't feel simple, but it is more simple than trying to overextend into everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I could see this, you know, in my own experience, but also other young dads I know, it's like, it makes it very clear. I mean, before having kids, you could think about anything, you could value anything. It's like, life is quite abstract when you're interacting globally or interacting online. Like you could follow any rabbit hole, you can subscribe to any morality, any political paradigm, whatever. But you know, all that really matters, like the only things that are objective is like, my family's happy and healthy. And like, you know, everything. Yeah. And before having kids, it wasn't that clear. Like, what is my moral compass or the spine of my viewpoints, you know? Yeah.
And I'll just speak for myself here. The reorientation of my own happiness, fulfillment, and just general sense of being okay, it's taken me time to yoke that to this smaller sense of responsibility, right? I think I'm as guilty as anybody to have found my own value in far-flung fucking ideas or big projects or, you know, just sort of much more externally focused. And to now, you know, and it took me years, man, it took several kids not to get here, but like really just like completely let go to the point of like, this is it. This is my world, right? This is where not only I get to, you know, give my energy and all of my love, but it's also the source of my energy and my love. And I'm not just saying parenting, right? I'm not just saying the kids, but I'm just saying like this, recalibrating the boundaries of my attention, right? And like falling in line, slowing down enough to fall in line with that and be fed and fulfilled and in love with that is, I think the digital aspect of life and just the global sort of bubble that you and I got to be raised in, and I think we're a little bit different in age, but relatively a lot of freedom, a lot of opportunity, a lot of just sort of anything goes. You know, there's a fall off from that. There's at least for me, there's a fall off to sort of just like, okay, this is it, and you know, I'm gonna grieve these things I probably need to grieve that I thought were gonna happen or were possible. But for me, it does feel like good news at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is really, you know, we're building a, not like a full-fledged homestead life, but you know, we got a little chunk of land and grow a big garden and raise chickens and we're going to get some pigs maybe. And, and I'm just finding myself like both intentionally, but also somewhat organically, yeah, finding my joy at home, you know? Somebody, yeah. Last thing on this little rant, but I don't remember who said this. I'm sure a lot of people said it, but you know, one of the best ways we can change the world is to make it so that home is where we want to be. I feel that happening.
Nice. Yeah. I have a mini version going on. We just started raising ducks and rabbits. Yeah. Actually. Yeah. I mean, I want more land just to fit more animals. Like I don't want a bigger house or anything like that. Like if I could have like 40 ducks in Peru, nice. We're in the, like in a rural area near Cusco. Wow. Yeah. So might get alpaca. They're a bigger commitment though. Well, there's a couple things I want to say or ask you about from what you just said. I forgot the earlier thing, but with the homesteading thing, actually, so switching gears for a second. And this could be just be my curated Instagram feed. This might not be representative of the world at all, but it does seem like at least the people that I'm interested in or follow are moving in that kind of direction. And in my interpretation, my armchair, you know, assessment of the world, it's like we've gone so far in globalist morality and our generation's experienced the negatives that more people want to kind of contract back down to like, this is my homestead, this is my land. This is my immediate community, but it's challenging going backwards, right? It's easier for a society to progress towards more complexity than to, you know, usually it only happens historically in the dark ages. Anyway, not to go into like, you know, too far off, but I'm curious what you think of that and anything that maybe you feel drove you in that direction as opposed to, you know, participating in globalism, let's say, to put it generally.
Did you ever listen to much Terrence McKenna? You ever listened to
me? I did.
His long rant.
Yeah.
Me too. A couple of years, I probably listened to 10,000 hours of him. But he had one talk. I'm sure he said it more than once, but he had this vision of the future where, you know, we would do all of our commerce, we'd do all of our work in, you know, kind of a VR reality. You know, we'd plug fully into the digital landscape and that's where we would, you know, do that part of life. And then we'd take it off. We'd step outside and we'd be in nature. We'd be in like a community oriented, you know, animals and plants and the elements. Right. And that stuck with me. It really stuck with me. And I probably heard it when I was like 25 or something, you know, and, I also grew up in a gardening family and a hunting family and a fishing family. And so sort of procuring our own resources was part of what we did. It's part of how I was raised. And it's something I've always loved. Like I, you know, would have a little garden in Brooklyn when I lived in Brooklyn. Like it's just something I've been very connected to. And I made my living and still a very fraction of what I do. I do a first time hunter's trip every year and take small groups of guys out to learn how to do that. So there is something natural inside of me. I also think that, I'm 40, I'm almost going to turn 42. Right. And I don't feel old yet, but I'm starting to feel what it feels like to feel old, if that makes sense. Right. Like I feel like there's a real midlife thing happening for me right now. And, I don't know, I think it is natural for expansion to cool down a little bit at some point in life. Right. And, a little bit less, a little less interest in high risk, high reward stuff. And I also, part of kind of what we're talking about here earlier about, the complexity just feels so, unstable to me. It doesn't feel like security. And I do think it's part of our generation's time to really, to have the wherewithal to notice within us this like deep fundamental primal yearning for connection, right? And not just with people, but with the land and with the place that we live. And, what happened in the pandemic for most of my friends and peers, there was just this big question of like, where are my people? Where are my fucking people? Mm-hmm. It's what we've been asking, This idea of immediate community, like immediate community that is like deeply, deeply connected, has been constant in terms of what I'm hearing in terms of feedback of what, parents of this generation want and what they're looking for. And I think it's really hard to actualize, I think it's, I can't tell you how many, dozen or dozens of friends were like, we're thinking about getting a piece of land and maybe five of us families can move on it. And everybody sort of has had this urge and no one's done it. Not a single, some people out there are doing it. Right. But I don't know. I do think parenthood and maybe just the times we're living in are calling forth like, some of the basic qualities of a good human life. Right. Like,
yeah.
And for me, it really does come down to safety too. Right. Like, we're not preppers. We're not like, I go through phases where my anxiety gets higher, but shit goes down. Things get weird. Things get weirder, right? We can raise some animals and we have water on our land. And I'm not saying we're going to survive, but, there's at least a thread of simplicity and security that, that we're intentionally sort of like planting into our life here.
Yeah. Yeah. And if there's any time in modern history where this actually seems like pretty reasonable of a future to prepare for,
it does.
I
always ask the question, like, have I become an extremist? Right. I don't know, but I think that's true. I think that's accurate for most people right now. It's just like, how are we going to do this?
Yeah. Have you read Ted Kaczynski's manifesto by any chance?
I have not, no.
The Unabomber. Yeah. Anyway, it's really interesting. I mean, it's like a more dystopian, similar to the Terrence McKenna thing you said, but his whole thing was technology is ruining society, taking us away from fulfillment. We need to go back to nature, make babies, whatever. But obviously his conclusion was to bomb us back to the Stone Age, which was different. But the premise was, I think about it a lot. It's like, it was kind of a simple idea of like, I do actually, as much as I love my career and I'm grateful for it, I do feel more fulfillment usually putting up a fence for my ducks.
Yep.
It's like physical. I'm in the sun. There's like a real being that appreciates it immediately, in some sense, it's like real life as opposed to anything you could do on a computer.
It's sane, it's sane. It's, what's that quote that people toss around about we're, prehistoric or shit, I'm fucking it up. It's something about how our bodies and nervous systems and brains are still, back in the Stone Ages. And here we are wielding these like super godlike powers. That's the phrase. It's some, it's the quote about like, we're not up to wielding these godlike powers because we're still just simple humans. Right. And I'm curious about threading the needle with that, but yeah, in the last couple of years, I've been honestly on the lookout, how do I move my sphere of influence closer to home, right? How do I, because how could I build a successful career and financial model for my family where you know, it doesn't require me getting on a plane to go to Silicon Valley. It doesn't require me to sort of build a digital community spread around the world. Like, what could I do right here? And it's kind of a, it's both scary and really interesting. And it's something in the back of my head all the time.
Yeah. The Terrence McKenna idea though, gives me a lot of hope as far as, and that seems very reasonable and also great, you know.
Well, it's what we're doing though, isn't it? I mean, it's what you and I are doing, right? In a sense,
yeah.
Like we're doing it right now, right? I mean, it's not a VR, but fuck, man. Like, you know, all of my economic flow comes through fucking Zoom and apps and all of this stuff, you know. And I go home, feed the chickens.
Yeah. So I saw that you were doing a class on parenting in the age of AI or something like that. Could you share a little bit about your takes on that?
Yeah, we did that in January. Had about 60 people show up, and for part of my professional world, like where I work with teams and leaders and these things, I had it's still alive a little bit, but it was more alive last year. Was working directly with teams that are building AI, and also teams that were working on trying to warn the world about where things are going. So just really had my head in it last year a lot and really like in the mix of it. And I think it points to a very acute question for parents in terms of our practice and how we engage with the world, how we raise our kids. And I think the Terrence McKenna thing is spot on, right? Because like for me, it's helpful to have some sort of vision for the family, have some sort of vision for myself, and you know, maybe some sort of vision for culture, right? But that's a much bigger thing. Our kids are going to be in a learning environment, or the possibility of a learning environment that is, you know, incredibly different than what we grew up with. And we're sitting here, like our kids right now are in a little Waldorf school where they're outside 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day, you know, very much connection based. It's very sane, very loving. And yet I worry a little bit, you know, that I don't want to rob my kids of skill sets and aptitudes that would help them be successful, you know, in their life too, you know, in 15, 12, 15 years when my kids are starting to be out in the world. You know, I think there's a handful of parents and families that came to that call. It was interesting who showed up and what the conversation was. You know, some people are like, fuck this, we're going off grid. You know, like I want nothing to do with this. I don't want it to influence my parenting. I just don't want anything to do with it. And then there's others who are just like, so into it, you know, just like, fuck, like I got this incredible new AI powered app. That's a personal tutor for my 7-year-old. And you know, like, let's just pull all of the, you know, any strictures around his learning and just let him fucking run and, you know, just do this amazing thing. And I don't know. I think the reality is somewhere in the middle, right? Technology is just going to keep being technology and it's going to grow. And I just think there's so much unknown right now, you know, cause I do think, one of my friends runs a sort of a think tank and a podcast about how AI is going to change the workspace in general. And that's coming, right? That's coming. Like the job landscape is about to shift drastically. And so one question that a lot of parents, let me wrap it up in a question that doesn't really have an answer, but is like, how do we parent now for this future that we can't quite predict? We know it's accelerating and changing very rapidly. So what the fuck does that mean for today? You know, that's kind of, I think that's some of the bind that a lot of people are feeling.
Yeah. And that dilemma that you brought up of, you know, keeping them sane versus keeping them competitive, let's say, in the global market. I think about that a lot because like, yeah, have you seen the movie Captain Fantastic?
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. 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 So like, I'm glad I saw that movie because there would be a part of me that would have idolized that idea, like the first scenes of just like being completely off grid, but then your kids are weird and hate you because they don't know how to socialize or whatever, you know? And I'm like, well, what is the balance there? And it kind of depends on where we are. Cause I even know my wife has friends who have homeschooled and like have really lived like this incredible connection based life and raising their kid. But we're hearing that their child who's now, you know, a teenager is having a really hard time. Like she's really great at like connecting to people and empathy and all the things that people take personal development workshops for, but she doesn't know anything about anything else. Like she can't connect with her. I can imagine how much that sucks for a teenager.
Yeah. What does Luddite mean? Do you know what that term means? I mean, keep meaning to look it up, but I haven't done it. It's somebody who just foregoes technology. Is that right?
I think so. I mean, that's how I would use it in a sentence. So, yeah.
I don't know where it actually comes from. But yeah, I think what you're saying is right, right? There's a person opposed to new technology or ways of working. Yeah, that's a Luddite. It's interesting. So my wife's parents live in northern Vermont, and most of their neighbors are Amish, right? And, they're very integrated in that culture. My father-in-law goes and throws hay bales with the Amish guys and fixes their shit, and they drive them all over, right? Because they can't drive. But it's being up there is a really interesting experience, because it's like, okay, well, here's a community of people who forewent, I don't know if that's a word, decided not to take the technological train. And, you know, man, one thing is that to watch the dads and watch the, you don't see the moms as much, but to watch the dads with their kids is like, for me, like almost an awakening experience. It's like, holy shit. Like, you know, like they're out in the morning and their kids are so fucking capable. They can just do, you know, 5-year-olds doing things that most 25-year-old like Westerner dudes just have no clue how to do. They're with their dad all day. There's just so much love. It's really wild, right? It's really wild. And so my wife and I joke sometimes, like, yeah, if we go really like anti-tech here, which we're not going to, we're attempting to find a middle road. We're not trying to become so disenfranchised that we exit mainstream culture. We're pretty close. You know, we're pretty close to that already. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know how this goes. You know, I don't know how this goes, but the Amish have something going on when it comes to family. I'm sure there are plenty of things that are probably not values fits if I was more aware, but.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, it's hard to go back to that. Like, you can't join an Amish community. I mean, I don't know if you can actually, if you just show up and say, hey, we're down with everything. Can you just join? I assume not, but also like psychologically to have experienced modernity for so long. I mean, it would be hard. But then like the whole idea of like five families sharing land is kind of an attempt at that. But unless there's like a really strong, you almost need a cult leader to get everyone on board. Cause like the Amish have the framework already, right? But like even like five of my friends who all, we basically agree on values and we all had the money and we all could agree on a place, which already is like many boxes that are hard to check. I can't imagine us like having such a unified value system that we could support each other. You know, we were going to have conflicts otherwise, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious what this is like for you, but for us personally, I think that the one thing that would like be a keystone to bring all of it together, like the nature-based lifestyle plus full immersion into the technological world, I think the thing that would really land the plane for us would be a really vibrant, small, intact local community, right? Mm-hmm. And we have community, right? We have great friends but there's just not that organizing principle, right? We don't have a cult leader. We don't even have a place to gather, right? I think one of the things that's happening in the Western world is that, you know, the church and religion is generally, you know, for a lot of people, not the place to go. So it's both a place, but it's also this sort of like intellectual or values proposition, right? There's just nothing that really binds right now. And it's, that's where I've been recently spending a lot of my time talking and thinking and writing is just like how, to me as social mammals, like, I guess there is a evolutionary path where we don't have that anymore, but it just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't quite click. Mm-hmm. I can't quite make that make sense. And so, you know, the village, the tribe, the people around us, I just don't know how it's going to go if we try to keep overriding that fundamental need, you know?
Yeah. Timothy Leary had one of his ideas was that, you know, human consciousness gave us the ability to like abstract reality in unlimited ways and come up with whatever, but that spins out of control and it'll just be endless. Like, it's a positive feedback loop that goes nuts, which is kind of what we're experiencing now. But the function of culture and morality is to constrain it and like be like, okay, this is the right way to do it. And we're all on the same page. Even if it's wrong, at least we're all on the same page. And yeah, I mean, he said that 40 years ago or whatever, but now we're kind of experiencing that where we can make new things and over, you know, fix the issues of the past, but we're all figuring it out and there's nothing binding us that's bigger than our intellect. Hence a lot of the political moral conflict right now.
One of the projects I've been working on this last year is a nonprofit that just brings men together in local communities to do service projects. Not a new idea, right? This is Mason's like men's fraternal organizations. This is like an old idea, right? But I did a first project last year and a local family's house burned down in the winter and they didn't have the means to clear out the rubble. Right. And so they had this big burnt pile of shit on their lawn and the local government was making a stink about it. Right. And needed it to be gone. It was starting to get into the water system, chemicals and stuff. And so there was a path where they were going to get pushed off their land. And so I called four or five local men's groups in Maine, brought a bunch of guys together, raised a bunch of money to rent, you know, some heavy equipment. And in 6 hours, we had 15 or 20 guys there and some equipment. And we cleaned the whole thing up, sent it to the dump. And it was, I don't know, like on that deep sort of primal level, one of the most fulfilling things I've done. And not only just because we did something positive, but that like it was a real sense of like, all right, you know, if our house fucking burns, there's some people here that will show up, right? It's just sort of like setting a precedent. And so I'm kind of hard at work thinking about how can we find each other, because we fucking need each other now more than ever. Man, that's my sense. I mean, you know, I got my family, I got my wife, got my friends and that, but there's a need there, you know, and I'm feeling it myself and hearing it from a lot of people too.
Yeah. For us, it's been interesting where we're living, our immediate village or vicinity. Like we're one of the few foreigners here, and a lot of like the local Andean people, like they own their land. They live mostly off the land and they're usually cash poor, but they don't need it. But one of the things with their community, it's like almost cult-like. We're like, you have to do community service. Like there's always some project and one person from every household has to send an adult to fix the dam or build the field or build someone's house. I mean, maybe it's not that different than the Amish, but most of them are jealous of the foreigners who get to send their kids somewhere else. Like they all want to escape it. And then for us, it's like, well, we would want something more of what you have. It's just very interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah. I had a few questions and maybe we don't have time to get into it, but I was wondering if connecting this idea of culture to family, if you think a lot about your family culture and like the paradigm that I guess, you know, you and your wife, or maybe you are giving your kids to view as normal, let's say, especially with the internet and like there's so many versions of normal or right, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I think about it all the time. And I would say, you know, at this stage, 7 years in, I feel pretty comfortable with what we've, you know, established and sort of the norms that we've tried to hold to. I think, you know, over the course of this conversation, you could tell we're very sort of hands in the dirt focused. So we spend a lot of time outside intentionally. So a lot of my work prior to becoming a parent has been about, you know, simple human presence and simple human connection and vulnerability. And so we've done very intentionally, you know, created a emotionally open and free home. But we also, I don't know, we're not tough parents, but we're not tough parents, right? Like we expect things out of our kids and ask responsibility out of them. And I'm proud to say our kids have really good manners. We have the kind of kids that are, you know, you bring them to a party or out to some kind of function and they're very at ease with people and very warm and very, very loving. And that was intentional, right? But it's also intentional and also kind of like the best of my wife and I, you know, like I think that's one of the things in terms of creating that culture. You know, my wife and I have and still, you know, remain a lot of challenges in our marriage, but when it comes to actually parenting, we found a good fit, right? I mean, you talk about the boots from the beginning of the interview, right? Like we chose the right pair of boots for raising kids. That's for fucking sure. And I'm really grateful for that. You know, there's plenty of other places where we've struggled, but, I don't know. You know, like I said, it's so we started with two boys, and with my background in men's work, it was very important for me to, you know, retain their innocence and retain their feeling capacity and, you know, not do the man up shit, at least as much as possible. And yet I think there's a healthy version of that too, where, you know, when I, there's a tone in my voice that comes out, and my boys know that I'm not fucking around either. You know? So, I think we've tried to find a middle road, you know, and, you know, we watch TV, they watch Netflix, and to a manageable level, right? We're not hyper protective of that, but it's also easy to see how that can spin out of control too. You know, like my kid's attitude after an hour of watching TV is very different than an hour after, you know, building fire outside.
Totally. Yeah. It's been interesting for us because, you know, having been in the personal development world for a long, my wife too, she was a coach for a long time, and having a lot of peers who are very deep into like individualism and exploring your feelings, and a lot of the, you know, men's work is like really focused on maybe the softer side because of the man up culture. But then I also see the extreme of that is not helpful. And I actually even see it like kind of sadly in some other young dads I know who went deep into that, where like they don't have boundaries, their kids are a little crazy. Like, you know, they're basically not bringing the traditional masculine presence that also brings safety. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to do that. I'm glad I'm seeing some of this too, you know, because I'm definitely way more alternative than my friends from New York, but we're probably the most normie family of the families we know where we are now, just because there's so many spiritual people here and alternative people. So we, you know, every day is like, well, where in the spectrum do we want to be?
I just want to say, I think I see that as a cool opportunity for myself and for other dads, if we want to look at it that way, right? It's like, because without that heart openness and that ability to be soft and connected, we're really taking an important thing away from our kids, right? And just as importantly, right, if we can't hold boundaries and, you know, it's not like we run a really tight ship, but in some ways we run a tight ship, you know, and I like that. To me, that feels healthy. To me, that feels like a cool opportunity. And I can see how that extends into other areas of life too, right? You know, in a business or in whatever you're engaged in, like to both be warm and connect and have compassion and also, you know, hold shit together. I mean, that sounds good to me, you know?
Yeah. One thing that's helped me that I actually got from another podcast guest, Stephen Kessler, is this idea that, I forget how he puts it, power or strength and love are not mutually exclusive, but society seems to view it that way. Like if you're being loving, you have to let them walk all over you, whoever them is, you know, but that's not true. So like when I'm being stern, I try to remind myself, can I really show a lot of love when I say you can't watch TV anymore? And on the flip side, you know, can I make sure that I'm also showing a spine, let's say, when I'm being loving, because it's easy to just like flip, even though they're not mutually exclusive. I think there's that assumption that they are sometimes.
Yeah. My work with men has shifted meaningfully, since I left Everyman. Everyman was all about the connection. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for it. Right. But I find that life requires more than that. You know, like parenthood certainly requires more than that. So I think that's actually, you know, it's a nice aspiration. I think powerful and loving. I think that kind of encapsulates it pretty well.
Yeah. And to what you've been saying also, it's like with an actual child in front of you, you don't have to think about the abstract version of where on the spectrum do I fall. It's like, well, what does the kid actually need? Who cares what adjectives we throw on it? You know, like she has to go to sleep so she feels better the next day, you know? And it just makes it real. At least that's what I've been realizing over and over again as a new parent.
Well, and that's why I do like bringing some of the, you know, development lens onto dads too, is because it gets tiring to just do work on an island on a retreat away from life, right? It's like, it's helpful. It's fun. We'll go learn some skills. We'll have a transformation. But like, no, man, bring it to your house, bring it to the fucking breakfast table, you know, like, like that's where the traction actually happens. So that makes me pretty happy.
Cool, man. Well, it was a pleasure reconnecting. So Fatherhood Unlocked, is your new podcast, and you have programs and retreats connected to it. Can you say something about the first time hunters things? I think I messaged you a few years ago because I still haven't hunted yet, but I've wanted to have taken. I think you recommended me to one of your friends.
So Rite of Passage Hunting is the website. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we do a couple hunts a year, first time hunters, 6 guys per cohort. This year we're doing an elk hunt in New Mexico and a deer hunt in Montana. And
cool.
Yeah, that's a true passion. Yeah, hit me up if you want to come, man. That'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because that's actually one of the things, like, on the Do We Move Back to America list is, like, hunting. I mean, I think it's the place for hunting, or the country for hunting, probably.
No, yeah, for sure. Or Russia, but that's complicated.
Yeah, well, that's a bigger move. Cool, man. Yeah, it was a pleasure speaking to you. Yeah, let's be in touch.
Yeah, take care, everyone.